Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3 for Spring Semester 2011. Lecture 15, delivered on March 24, 2011. The title of this lecture is Cost of Capital.
Today, cost of capital. This topic, in some ways, it seems like I just introduced you to net present value as a decision-making framework and internal rate of return as an alternative. And here I'm going to give you what looks like a third way to determine what projects to accept and what projects to reject. And this way is quite sophisticated, but it begins with the idea of optimal capital structure. Firms have a sense through calculations or through historical tradition or through industry standards of what is the appropriate mix of debt and equity for the firm. And the sense is that there is a mix of debt and equity that minimizes the weighted average cost of capital. If you have too much equity and too little debt, the weighted average cost of capital is too high. If you have too much debt and too much equity, the weighted average cost of capital is again too high. So in other words, the sense is that the weighted average cost of capital curve, the cost of debt weighted by its amount plus the cost of equity weighted by its amount, looks something like this. We would have, let's say, the percent of debt to total assets. And there would be the sense of the WACC, the weighted average cost of capital, which would be the weight of the debt times the cost of debt plus the weight of equity times the cost of equity, writing it in very simple terms. And that if the percentage of debt is too low, then you're paying too much because equity is actually very expensive. But as you increase the amount of debt, you're realizing the benefit from cheap debt. Debt is actually cheaper than equity. But there is a point where the debt stops getting cheaper. It stops being cheap. If you put too much debt into your capital structure, you will end up risking not being able to pay your interest. And therefore, debt holders are going to start hitting you hard on the interest rate on the debt they lend you. So at some point, you're going to start scaring debt lenders, and they'll start jacking up the cost of debt to you. And so as you move towards more and more debt, ultimately, you will actually cause the weighted average cost of capital curve to swing back upward. Ultimately, then, there is some bottoming out of the WACC curve, the weighted average cost of capital curve. And that bottoming out is essentially what we call the optimal capital structure. The optimal capital structure. Now, this might be 35% debt, 65% equity, 70% debt, 30% equity. There is, to some extent, and I know I'm going to get bitched at by some people who are professionals who listen to these podcasts who say, well, it's a science. No. There is science in finding optimal capital structure, but there is also a lot of, well, we think it is this. well, we've had it this way, so we're going to keep it this way. So in this class, and actually, honestly, in a lot of the classes you would take from me at more advanced finance classes, I'm just going to tell you, this is the optimal capital structure. 40% debt, 60% equity, something like that. I'm not going to say, let's find the optimal. What I'm going to say is, let's keep the optimal. So that part is a relief. We don't have to actually try to figure out the math of the optimal. I do want to give a passing mention. The book talks about this kind of a traditional subject in finance, brought up a long time ago by two finance jockeys / economists, Modigliani and Miller, who pointed this out. Look, debt is cheaper than equity. First of all, debt is safer than equity, therefore it expects a lower return. Why is debt safer than equity? Because it has the prior claim on cash flow. Equity sucks high and tip. That's an old farm term. It's not. You see, debt gets paid first, so of course it's lower risk, lower expected return. But there's another reason that debt is cheaper than equity. Companies get to expense their interest payments, which means that for debt, the actual cost of debt is less than what you actually pay. If you're in a 30% marginal tax bracket and your debt interest is 10%, you actually, after taxes, are paying only 7% because you get to write off the interest against taxable income. Remember EBT, or EBIT, then you take away the interest and you get to EBT and then you figure out your taxes. So that means that debt is not the cost of debt, it's 1 minus the tax rate times the cost of debt. So that makes debt even cheaper. So debt is cheaper than equity for two reasons. One is it's safer, so investors will expect a lower return. Two, it benefits from the tax shield. The corporation benefits from the tax shield arising from interest payments. Modigliani and Miller said this. Okay, if debt is cheaper than equity, why do we not see all corporations 100% debt? Why don't we? Now, some people interpreted this that Modigliani and Miller were kind of naive. Well, obviously it's not, so there. But what they were doing was laying out the challenging us to answer the question, why do we not see corporations at 100% debt? If debt is cheaper than equity, why aren't corporations all debt? And that's what I just brought up to you, was you see, as you add more debt to your capital mix, you are going to obviously pay a higher amount of interest, which means that it gets closer and closer to EBIT. So your times interest earned is getting scary. It's getting very low, closer to one, which means that the volatility, which is natural, the business risk, puts you in the position where if there's any fart at all in your cash flow, your game is over. So in other words, if I have an interest payment of $10,000, my EBIT is $100,000, ha 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 ha. But if I have an interest payment of $50,000 and my EBIT is $100,000, even it gets a little scary for the lenders. They're saying, hey, you better make sure you make $100,000 because we've lent you $50,000. If your interest payments go to $80,000, those lenders are going to say, you know what? If your $100,000 EBIT bobbles by even 25% because of volatility, you're in default. We have to take it over. We have to close your corporation. So the bottom line was, as I had shown you before, that although debt is cheaper than equity, and for quite a while, your weighted average cost of capital goes down as you use more debt and less equity, there will come a point where you will get too much risk with the debt causing default. And that will mean that as you add more and more debt as a percent of total assets, you will eventually get to the point where more debt will cause you to get the weighted average cost of capital to go up. So that's why I talk about that optimal capital structure. So in the problems you'll see here, I will just tell you, the company has and wants to maintain such and such a capital structure. In fact, in the real world, you will actually see, sometimes I saw this, the first time I saw it, I thought, well, this is kind of cool. A company I saw, it was selling stock, and it was quite blunt. They said, well, we're selling the stock, we don't really need the money, but we've got too much debt, and we've got to sell stock to bring us back to our optimal capital structure. That was why they sold the stock, was just simply to get their balance back where they wanted it to be. Same is true on the other side. Sometimes a company will just borrow money long term, not because they really need the money as much as they need to get their weighted average cost of capital curve back down to its bottom, where they think it is. So there you are. Now I'm going to get a little bit more specific. You know what? I just ran out of acetate. That looks like accounting. Oh, God. Reel up. There is. Oh. Cool. Now if I know how to do this, I always rely on some other poor sod to do the actual replacement. I don't know how the hell do you do this. But while I'm doing that, let me keep talking here like I... Well, don't just sit there. Someone help me out, for God's sake. You do? You do. You're not just doing that so that you can make a mess, right? Well, yes, you... I'll bring cookies next time. You can have a cookie. Actually, I think I have some crumbs in my pocket. I bought some Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, nice. Which kinds?
Shortbread.
So you just stick it right here. Sorry. I think that's what you do.
That tape, is that supposed to, like, attach? You know what?
Oh, no, it comes out like a toilet paper roll.
Whoa!
Yeah. And then you just put it in.
Oh! Charmin, that's my brand.
Yeah. I don't do Charmin, it clogs toilets.
You ever tried that one with the lotion?
No. Yeah, maybe once or twice.
It's weird. Why are we talking about this? For God's sake, man.
You started it.
I did not. Now, what goes on this?
I think you just empty that out. Yeah.
How?
Oh,
I see. There.
Yeah.
You know, that's actually quite pleasantly warm. Now, is this supposed to tape on here?
Oh, you tape that to the end. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, okay. Now we can continue class.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
no
you.
Problem.
Someone give him a cookie or a pat on the buttock, something. Please. Okay, there. Now, back to what I was doing. There are three basic ways that a company can raise money. Three large ways. One is that it could sell stock to raise money. It could also issue debt to raise money. There's actually a third way that a company could raise money. Anyone know what the third way is? I love this one. You can actually earn money through your operations. I probably before your time, there was a famous actor named John Houseman who did advertisements for one of the big brokerage houses. I don't remember. We make money the old-fashioned way. We earn it. And that's basically your first line of defense, of course, is your internally generated equity, the money that you actually bring to the bottom line that you could use for your operations. Remember, net income isn't really the key. You have to take out any dividends. And then what's left is your plowback money. And that's the term I use. I don't think they use that term in the book, but you'll hear me use the term your plowback money. That's what we call internally generated equity. It belongs to the shareholders. It's their residual claim. We've paid the debts. Now we have money from operations, net income minus your dividends, that part that adds to your retained earnings at the beginning of the year. So we've got that as one source of money. We've got our debt, our internally generated equity, and we've got our externally generated equity. Now, the externally generated equity actually comes in two flavors. The externally generated equity comes in two flavors. These are both equity, but you could actually sell common stock or you could sell preferred stock. Okay, so essentially at the end of the day, there are actually four possible component costs of capital. Now, I'm going to tell you right now that realistically, well, for me, I don't worry too much about preferred stock. You won't see it in one of my problems. And the reason is this. I just don't want to. No, it's a little more practical than that. Preferred stock, yeah, it's out there. Companies do it. It's not particularly wildly popular. Although there are classes of investors who do like preferred stock. Don't get me wrong. Remember, preferred stock is equity, except that it has an interesting little feature. Preferred stock gets its dividend before common stock gets its dividend. And if you can't pay the preferred stock its dividend, you can't pay the common stock its dividend. Even worse, if it's cumulative preferred, and you can't pay the preferred stock dividend, and you start backing up dividends on the preferred, you have to make them all up before you can ever pay a dime to your common shareholders. So in a way, it is very much like a debt instrument. It's got like the prior residual claim. So it actually ends up having a lower cost of capital. And also, as I said, it's actually popular with some investor classes. For example, in older people's portfolios, you shouldn't be surprised to see preferred stock because it's like a dividend is always coming. It never grows, but it's pretty much, as long as the company is doing okay at the bottom line, that dividend check is just like an interest check from debt. It just keeps going. But it has one advantage over a debt check, an interest check from lending the company money. Preferred stock is equity. It goes on forever. With debt, eventually the debt will pay off, and then you get your money back, and then you have to reinvest. With preferred stock, once you buy that stock, as long as that company is okay, you will just get that preferred dividend year over year over year for the rest of your life and your children's lives and all that kind of stuff. So that's why actually some investors prefer it, especially those who are interested in fixed income and a relatively safe way of investing their money so that they don't have it coming back to them and then they have to reinvest it. But for the purposes of this course, I don't do preferred stock. I stick to the three sources: debt, internally generated equity, and externally generated common equity. So at the end of the day, the three costs of debt, the component costs of capital, are going to be these. You're going to have, and I'll label these, the costs of, and component costs of capital. The component costs of capital are going to be these. First, the cheapest is going to be your cost of debt. Case of D. But what we care about is the after-tax cost of debt. KAT is the cost, after-tax cost of debt is the cost of debt times 1 minus the company's tax rate. And I use the Greek letter tau to represent the tax rate, the average tax rate. That is the after-tax cost of debt. Now, when we get to a little bit realism in problem, and this is actually real in business too, you'll find out that when banks lend money to corporations, like in a sort of line of credit kind of way, they're going to do it like this. They're going to say, all right, you borrow up to $500,000, we're going to charge you 8%. After $500,000, if you still need more, yeah, we'll lend it to you, but your cost goes up to, let's say, 12%. They will have a jumping point, and they do out there in the real world. They're going to say, you know, it's really safe at up to $500,000, but there's a little more risk in you if you're borrowing more than that, because we're not sure you're going to be able to pay it all back. You might default. So there will be a jump somewhere, and you will see a schedule where they will list, all right, your cost of debt will be this up to a certain amount of money, but if you need more than that, your cost of debt will be above that. And if you look on that worksheet that I just gave you there, do you see the jump on that little table right there in the center of the narrative? Do you see the jump? Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. The bump up. So when I say, what's the cost of debt? You're going to say, oh, well, there would be two. There would be one, the after-tax cost of debt. There would be one before the bump and then after the bump. So you would always give me two answers there. And then there is going to be the cost of internally generated common equity. And I will designate that as a case of E. Now let me swing down here and show you how I know what that is. You remember that I can actually find the price of stock now. P0 would be D1 over K minus G. Well, that's case of E. In that formula. Remember that formula I showed you? Well, I can rearrange this. I think I can rearrange this. Yeah. So K minus G equals D1 over P0. So K, the cost of internally generated equity, is going to be D1 over P0 all plus G. That's the cost of internally generated equity. So the second component cost of capital, the cost of internally generated equity, is going to be D1 over P0 plus G. Now we go to the third part, C. And by the way, you won't be turning these in today. You will finish them over the weekend, and you turn them in on Tuesday to me if you want. Huh? The cost of internally generated equity. It's actual interest. It'll be an interest rate. There's actually a cost in terms of interest to it. You'll see it in a second. It'll show up as just like a percentage. And it'll be a bigger percentage than the debt. Tell you that. Now, there's one more here. The cost of new equity, case of N. Now, again, remember, I'm not doing preferred here. I won't do preferred here. Now, the difference between internally generated equity and new equity is that if I have to go out and sell stock to raise money, I have to pay the brokers, which means that I don't get P0. If my stock is selling at, let's say, $20 a share, you know what? I'll have the brokers sell my stock, and they're going to keep a piece of it, let's say like 5% of it. So I won't get $20 a share. I will get $20 minus their cut. If it's 5% of $20, that would be a buck. So I would not get $20. I would get $20 minus one. So I modify the cost of internally generated equity formula, and I say, well, if it were actually new equity, the denominator wouldn't be P0, it would be P0 minus the float cost plus G. All right. And again, if I could remember what I had just told you where to go to get this, they're on pages 242 to 246. So if my writing is sloppy here, you can see these same formulas on those pages, 242 to 246. They show you the formulas. So there are my component costs of capital. Now here's what's going to happen. I will blow through my cheapest form of capital to spend on new projects. I got a bunch of proposed projects. Well, let's say that I start deciding that I am going to start doing these projects. The first thing I'll do is I will blow through my cheapest source of capital. My cheapest source of capital will be the money I borrow. Once I have chewed through that, then I will go to my next cheapest source of capital. That would be my net income minus my dividends, my internally generated equity. Once I had blown through that, I would then start nomming on my most expensive source of capital, which would be my externally generated equity. And it's just logical. And of course, I would be doing these in the keeping the balance proper. What I would know, the question would be, when do I know when I would have to make the switches? Yeah, I do. Those are called the breakpoints. In other words, when would I have to switch from debt to equity? When would I have to switch from internally generated equity to new equity that I had sold through brokers? We can do that. They're called the breakpoints. They're called the breakpoints. At every level, within a breakpoint, up to the first breakpoint, and then the next breakpoint, and then the next breakpoint, at every level, I'm going to have a marginal cost of capital, the cost of borrowing one more dollar. The marginal cost of capital, the MCC. The first spending spree I go on, my marginal cost of capital up to the first breakpoint will be the weight of debt times the after-tax cost of debt plus the cost of existing equity times, the weight of equity in the debt mix times the cost of existing equity. Okay? But remember that there are two debts. There's the cheap debt, and then the debt after the bank gets bitchy at us. So then the second tier of marginal cost of capital is going to be the weight of debt in my optimal capital structure times the after-tax cost of the second tier of debt plus the weight of my net income I'm using times the cost of existing equity. That will be the second tier of marginal cost of capital. And finally, my third tier, I'm using all expensive stuff because I'm having to borrow at the higher rate, so it'll be the after-tax cost on debt level two, plus I've blown all of my net income, so now I've got to go to the brokers. I got to go to the capital markets. So the weight of equity will be times the cost of new equity. Those will be the three tiers of the marginal cost of capital. This will be the cost, marginal cost of capital up to the first break point where I have to switch to expensive debt. Yeah. I give those. The optimal capital structure I will always give you. And I hope to God someone would always give it to me because getting it calculated is way too much like work. I will give it. If you see that problem, I think I say almost right off the bat the optimal capital structure. Do you see it in the problem? What is it? Yeah, it is. What is it, as a matter of fact? 35% debt and 65% equity. So it's right there, right off the bat. I don't mess with that at all. So the weights you got right off the top. Now, here's the issue, though. Oh, by the way, notice something interesting. Do you see this first marginal cost of capital? That's actually the WACC. That's the weighted average cost of capital. Your first tier of the marginal cost of capital, the cost of extra capital, is your weighted average cost of capital. Now, trust me, it looks like I'm just pouring things at you, but what I'm doing is I'm actually creating the machinery so you can do these step by step by step, and you don't have to think about it. If you do think about it, you will go crazy. Yes?
For the percent of common equity, is that
interest or negative? Either one, it's still equity. Okay. It's still equity, okay? As a matter of fact, let me show you. Did you have a lunch?
Yeah.
Okay, put your head up like this. Look at the ceiling for me. Okay, now open your mouth. Yep, noms. They're in there.
What?
Noms. What? Food. Okay, now I could go over there to the cafeteria. Huh. There's noms there too. Noms internal, noms external. There's still food. What the okay? where the hell was? Oh, okay. Look. So I could put now I put on a horizontal axis money needed. Now, we're plowing through one project after another project after another project. Okay? So we're going to need more money each time we go to a new project. But that's another thing entirely. But the thing, though, is that what's going to happen is that there will be a time when I will be using cheap debt along with my internally generated equity. Sooner or later, I will run through and I'll have to end up starting to borrow higher with the more expensive debt, which means that I will go from MCC1 up, suddenly jump to MCC2. And then later, somewhere later, I'm going to have to jump up again, and I've burned through. I'm in my more expensive debt, and now I've used up all of my net income, so now I've got to go to the brokers. I'm paying the bank higher interest, and I'm also now having to raise money through the external capital markets. So then I end up paying that top tier MCC3. It'll be like levels, like stairs going up. The next question would be, okay, where are these, what you keep calling breakpoints? There are obviously two of them. There's a breakpoint one and a breakpoint two, where the cost of capital pops. How do we find those breakpoints? Well, actually, that part's pretty easy. You've got to be careful about one little thing in it. You've got to be careful about one little thing in it, though. When you and I'll bring this up in a second. Now, what was the cost? What was the cost? What was the point where we jumped on the debt? What was the dollar value where the bank started socking us at a higher interest rate? What was it? Quarter million? Breakpoint one will be the break limit. In that case, over what's the contribution of debt to the capital structure? 35 over 0.35. That's how you do it. Now what? If I took a quarter million over 0.35, I get 786 dollars. Now let me explain what that means. And if it doesn't sink in right away, don't sweat it. It will. If debt is 35% of my expenditures at any given point in time, I'd have to blow through a total of $714,286 before I would use up $250,000 of debt. Let me say that again. I got this very intellectual look on your faces that's telling me, huh? If debt is 35% of every dollar that I spend on projects, and I can spend up to $250,000 in debt, you see that? That's and cheap debt. That means I could spend a total of $714,286 in total debt and equity money before I hit the $250,000 breakpoint on debt. Did that help a little bit? It'll get there. Let's do the breakpoint two. We've already just beaten the crap out of our debt. We're already in expensive debt. Now let's see how much equity we have to go, we can go through. Now, what's the net income of this company? Can you tell me that? What's the net income this company is going to realize? What the hell is it? Oh, $1.2 million it expects to earn next year, okay? So should I use $1.2 million? No, because this company is going to pay some of that out in a dividend. Watch it when I do that, okay? Watch it when I do that. $1.2 million. What did it, how many shares do I have outstanding? 40,000. Okay, what will be the dividend per share? So how much total money in dividends am I going to pay? Try that again. Make sure you're all on the same page. I have 40,000 shares outstanding. I'm going to give each of those shares a $5 dividend. That means that the total dividend payout will be 200 grand. Are you okay on that? So tell me, after I pay my shareholders their dividends, how much will I have for investing in my company? $1 million. Do you see it? Watch that. You be careful because I will, not always, but sometimes I'll say, well, this is net income. And then I'll mention, oh, there's a dividend in there somewhere too. Be careful of that. So we have to say, okay, so now the company is going to blow $1 million in net income. It has that much net income before it would have to go out and sell more stock. What was the percentage of equity in the capital structure? 0.65. So what do I have? $1 million divided by 0.65. Survey says, do you get $1,538,462? Ah, sweet. So now I know my breakpoints. I know that I will be able to fund projects with cheap debt and my internal and my net income up to $714,286. Then I know that I will be able to keep funding projects with more expensive debt and still have my net income that I'm using up to $1,538,462. How are you doing with me? Are you okay? See, if you just do it step by step, it's not hard at all. Yeah.
That's inclusive of the first breakpoint?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, essentially, up to $714,000, we were using cheap debt and the money we had made from operations. Now, we still have plenty of money left from operations to keep going, but if we want to keep our capital structure 35-65, we have to start borrowing. We still have to be borrowing debt, but they're going to make us pay more for it. So we can keep going with more expensive debt and the cheap equity up to 1.5 mil. Then, finally, after that, we get our butts kicked. We are at the most expensive. We are using expensive debt, and we're having brokers sell expensive stock for us, expensive equity for us. Now we're ready to put the final touches on the marginal cost of capital curve. I actually kind of take you in reverse on this. Now we can go back here. Well, let's figure out these component costs of capital so we can actually calculate the marginal cost of capital. And I'm going to come down here and I'll write them again. Debt. KAT on the first tier of debt is the cost of debt at tier 1 times 1 minus the tax rate. Then the second tier of debt, the more expensive debt, would be the cost of debt tier level 2 times 1 minus the tax rate. So we can do those. Those are almost no-brainers. What was the cheap debt's cost straight up front? I want you to look for it. What was the cheap debt's cost up front? Where the hell? Yeah, what was it? What's the interest rate the bank's going to charge on cheap debt? Do you see 10% there? Make sure you see it. I will put it in a table with a big red flag on it. 10%. So the first level of debt is going on a after-tax basis is going to be 10% times 1 minus, what's this company's tax rate? 40? I thought it was. 40%. So it will be, the after-tax cost on the first tier of debt will be 10% times 0.66%. The after-tax cost of debt on the second tier will be, what's the cost of expensive debt? 12% times 1 minus 0.4, which should be 7.2%, right? You with me on it? So now I've got those two. Now let me get equity. The first kind is internal. The cost of existing equity is D1 over P0 all plus G. Now, do I have D1 or do I need to take D0 times 1 plus G to get it? Did I give you next period's dividend or did I give you this period's dividend? Yes, I did. To be paid in 1 year. So I gave you D1. I want to make sure you're okay with that. Remember, it always uses D1, not D0. In this case, I gave you D1. If I had given you D0, you would have to have grown it 1 year. But here, I gave you D1. What was D1 in this case? What was the dividend that's being paid in a year? $5. What's the price of the stock right now? What does it say? What's the growth rate? 5%? 9%. So the cost of internally generated equity is $5 divided by $50, which is 0.10 plus the 0.09 is 0.19. So the cost of internally generated equity is a whopping 19%. Way more expensive than debt, even when debt's expensive. Now, let's do the cost of externally generated equity. K sub n is D1 over P0 minus float plus G. How are you doing? You got it? Now, what's your float here? Do you see where I tell you the float? 8% did I say? I want to rip. Oh, sorry. Okay. So what's the price of the stock? What's the price of the stock? So how much are the brokers going to take? Oops. So in other words, case of N is $5 over $50 minus $4 plus 0.09. So we would have in that case $5 over $46 plus 0.09. What's 5 over 46? Yep. So that's, if you work that out, it will come out to be 19.87%. So in other words, new equity is almost a full percent more expensive than existing equity as a cost of capital. So now we're ready to put it all together. Remember my marginal cost of capitals, my MCCs? The MCC, first one, up to the first break point, will be the weight of debt times the after-tax cost of cheap debt, plus the weight of equity times existing equity. The marginal cost of capital from the first to the second breakpoint will be the weight of debt times the weight of expensive debt, plus we're still burning through the net income minus dividends, WE times KE. And finally, past the second breakpoint, the third marginal cost of capital will be, oops, that's a 2, will be the weight of debt times the after-tax cost of expensive debt plus the weight of equity times the cost of that expensive new equity. How you doing? You see it? And now all we're going to do is plug the numbers. We've got all the numbers we need. Let's get the first MCC. What's W sub D? What's the weight of debt in the capital structure? What is it? So we do 0.35. What was my first cost of debt? What did it come out to be? Times 6.35 times 6% plus what's the weight of equity in my capital structure?
I have a question.
Yeah.
For MCC3, why is it case of N and that's the case of N?
That's a
case of N.
Yeah.
Why is it that?
Why is it? Because equity's weight doesn't change just because we go to more expensive equity. It's still 65% of our capital structure. Okay? It'll still be the weight of equity in optimal capital structure, which is
65%. Right. But the K.
The K?
Yeah.
We've blown through our net income. Now we've got to raise money. Now we've got to use money from selling common stock.
Oh.
Yeah. 0.65 times 19%. If you work that out, 0.35 times 6% plus 0.65 times 9%, you'll come up with The first marginal cost of capital tier is running at 14.45%. Let me write that again. That's kind of sloppy there. Now let's go and do the marginal cost of capital on the second level. It will be the weight of debt times, now we're using expensive debt, which is 7.2% after taxes. We're still using our equity cost, our weight of equity is 65%, and we're still using net income. We still got some of that left over. So case of E will be, it'll be 0.65 times 19%. So now we can crank the next one. 0.35 times 7.2 plus 0.65 times 19. And our cost, marginal cost of capital on the second tier has now gone to 14.87%. And finally, when we're using expensive debt on the third cost, marginal cost of capital level, 0.35 times 7.2% plus 65.65 is the weight of equity, and new equity costs us, what's the cost of new equity? 19.87. So 0.35 times 7.2 plus 0.65 times 19.87. We have made it up to a whopping 15.44%. Believe it or not, we're almost done. But again, notice this is just really arithmetic all along here. Now let me show you visually what I've done and what you need to do for the weekend. Look, we had a money axis. The first thing is you notice that I gave you the graph to work with. You are going to have to decide the scales on the two axes. I've set them up so that if you choose properly, it comes out just perfect. Now we ought to look over here. What are we possibly investing in? Well, we got a $500,000 project, a $1.6 million project, a $600,000 project, and a $1.5 million project. So what is that? That's 2.1, 2.7, 3.7. About 4.2 million is the total amount that we might spend on new projects. So now I can look at that graph there, and on the horizontal axis, it's like, probably your choice for the scale. You see those tick marks at the bottom? You see those? Probably my recommendation would be to jump in $500,000 increments. In other words, the first tick mark would be $500,000, second would be $1 million, third would be, and you have to do this carefully. The next part of it, which I can't do, I'll have to do it here as carefully as I can on this acetate thing. Once you have laid in your markers, and you should not, I don't know if anyone ever told you this, don't label each damn tick mark. You label the first one to give your scale. And then you give them at important points. Like here, I would put in 0.5. And then I would probably go up until I got to 5 million or to 2.5 million and then mark another one. Along like that. Well, actually, I wouldn't even do that one right there. Those two I wouldn't even put in. Okay, now the next is where you will use a ruler or I will give you a turbo wedgie. It's special. You locate on the x-axis breakpoint 1. What was breakpoint 1? 714 million? 714,000? As well as you can, locate that and draw a very thin line up from there. A very thin line or a dotted line. I actually would do a dotted line, but it's hard to do that with this, with these markers. That's breakpoint 1. You draw the wall. At breakpoint 1. Now, where was breakpoint 2? I find 1.5. As closely as you can, you locate breakpoint 2. And you draw that one in as a perfectly straight line, a thin line or a dotted line. And again, I like to use dotted lines, but I can't here. Now you have laid in the breakpoints. Now the next thing that you're going to have to do is put in the marginal cost of capitals. Now that's on the vertical axis. Now if you look at those MCCs, those tick marks, I set them up so that you can do 1% for each one. Each tick mark is 1%. And again, as always, as I said before, you should mark your first tick mark to give the scale. And then maybe each 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. So you got your scale. Now tell me, what was the first marginal cost of capital tier? What was it? What was it? 14.45. Okay. With a straight edge, you draw 14.5 as a horizontal line up to the breakpoint 1. Just like I did there. You're about to see why I draw in the breakpoints. At breakpoint 1 is where the marginal cost of capital jumped. So now, after breakpoint 1, you do marginal cost of capital 2 as a horizontal line. What was the second marginal cost of capital? 14.7. That was good. That's good. If you let me ask the damn question. So, and then after breakpoint 2, Your third marginal cost of capital was 15.44. And then it stays at that from there on. So looky there. You have just done your first marginal cost of capital curve. Yeah. There is none here. There should be. I put that in there just to bluff your ass. I did, and I thought, why am I doing that? You know, they don't know what I'm doing. Now, let me show you the last piece, and that's for you to do on your own. You see, I gave you a bunch of investments there. You see those investments there on the first page? You rearrange them from the best to the worst. What's your best investment? It is?
The last one.
Will you stop guessing for God's sake? Yes. Project D, as in doggy, is an 18% winner. So on that second page, you see that table that says investment opportunity schedule? That's an IOS. Your IOS, the first one you would put in, is Project D. It will cost us $1,500,000, but it will return us 18%. What's the next best one?
What is IOS?
Investment Opportunity Schedule. It says right there.
Oh, I just...
A, which turns will run us $500,000. And bring us 16%. And I'll let you figure out how to do it from there. But here's the upshot. Here's how we know which projects to invest in. Go back. You see Project D? Project D will run us $1.5 million... at 18%. Do you see how Project D is above marginal cost of capital? Do you see it? We'll take it. It brings us more than it cost. Now, the next project is Project A. After we finish Project D, as in doggy, we would then go and do Project A, which will run us another $500,000. So we will go from where we finished spending money on Project D, and we'll spend another $500,000 on Project A. Tell me, should we take it? Look at it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We will take it. Do you see how its whole life, up to the last dollar we spend, it's going to bring us more than it cost. And then I let you finish the last two projects yourself. You tell me, which projects do we take on and how much total money do we spend? Just chew through it. Listen to the podcast again. Feel the love. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.